everybody, and welcome back to your favorite G.I. Joe podcast show, Feeling the Christmas Spirit. Why do we only do Christmas cartoons? That's because back in the 80s and 90s, Christmas was the only holiday in December. Sorry, everybody, I don't make the rules.
It was actually considered hate speech to say the word holiday instead of Christmas.
As it should be, obviously. You know, there's a war on Christmas, as we all know, and to that I say happy Honda days to you.
I happy. Celebrate the Merry Toyotathon, so...
Ooh, well, oh, well, our people are arch enemies. This is Knowing is Half the Podcast, and I am Race to Canis.
I am Robert Clark Chan here, but in Germany, I am Robert...
That means when you take a shit during sex and you're also related to Robert Clark Chan in some way, right?
Yep. You got it.
That is literally exactly what it means. Yeah.
I'm Gina Ippolito, and it's the same worldwide, motherfucker, because that's who I am. I've got name recognition.
You know, Gina by the donkey she walks around on.
You know, TV's Gina Ippolito has, what they call them, exes now? What do we call them? 21,000 favorite exes. How does this work, Gina? I don't know anymore.
I know what you're talking about, but I have no idea what you're saying.
I don't know what you're talking about. I started to think of Dominic the Donkey, the classic Italian Christmas song, and now that was what I was focused on.
Well, there's this Nazi affiliated website where you've got 21,000 people who clicked on your ex, and then you
Ray.
You
everyone knows that you are the Nazi on this podcast. You can't try and retcon it now.
I will try to rewrite history as best I can. What is really sad is between the three of us. I guess I would be the closest to a Nazi, but it's like not very close.
I mean, I'm legally blind, so I cannot see.
Oh,
yeah. God, yeah, yeah, no, yeah. That's no. The sound I'm looking for. That's I what I want.
I don't care for that. Anyway, this week we are watching, what is it? I don't even know anymore. Benji's Very Own Christmas Story. Benji the Dog. This is from 1978. So that's close enough to the 80s and 90s. We'll take it. It's live action. So first, I just need to say what the H-Gen. What's that?
We've gone all the way back, and we've done live action. So when I looked at this crazy-ass list, I was like, oh, yeah, that is right up our alley. This looks like it could either be the worst thing ever or worse than that. And I'm going to tell you something. I kind of liked it.
Oh, God. Oh, Robert Clark Chan. Stop.
I don't know what it is. I did not. Okay. When I was very little, and I'm talking like not even old enough to like have clear memories, I have sort of like a vague friendly feeling towards Benji. So like at some point I like saw a Benji thing and I was like, oh, this dog is awesome. But then, you know, from, I don't know, like age six on, I'm like, this is pure bullshit. But I watched this thing, and at no point was I like, fuck this, I'm out of here. I was just kind of like, I didn't understand why it exists, but I kind of dug it.
What?
So you're a fan of Benji in general, or you are a fan of just this Benji?
Well, we were trying not to talk about this before it started, but some things just like... came out because Gina can't hold her damn tongue. And she was all like, what is this Benji thing without any Benji in it? And which I noticed, I was also like, there's
no, first of all, that was Ray that said that. Damn it.
It's not just me who does it.
I can.
No, but it is just me who gets affected.
Well, in this case, you were blamed for something very insightful. So you were actually taking credit for
all
something.
I said was I found it boring. But you're attributing a Ray quote to me, which, like, frankly, is I should sue you for that.
I mean,
oh, wow.
Yes. Yes, you should.
This holds up. This holds up. Well, like, it's,
there's no freaking Benji in this, but it's still enjoyable, and I felt full of Christmas spirit.
I have questions. I had a lot of questions about various aspects of this. That being said, I consider this Benji special to be a lot like Star Wars sequel Episode 7, The Force Awakens, in that there's nothing in here to really dislike. It's sort of just made as fan service. And so as I watch it, I'm like, there's nothing to hate here, but there's not really anything to like here either. It just sort of is. It's pandering, and I guess that's okay.
I just found it boring. I didn't find anything offensive. It's the type of thing that 2 years from now, someone will say, oh, did you guys cover this? And I'll say, I don't think so.
That happens a lot. Yes, it does. Now, here's the deal. Benji, Gina, you do a lot of Wikipedia searching. What can you tell us about Benji the dog that our audience of Zoomers and Gen Zers might not know?
I can tell you that I get Benji the dog confused with Sandy, Annie's dog.
Yeah, but Benji had a bunch of movies. Sandy just had the one-off. Sandy's a one-trick pony.
I was a Sandy fan, and that one movie I've seen more than any other Benji movies.
Well, Benji was a dog. What kind of dog? Golden mixed breed dog. Golden Terrier, I believe. Isn't that what Benji is? I can't even on the Wikipedia page. No, they won't tell me what kind of dog.
No, because
Benji
He's like a mutt. He's like a street dog.
So Benji there was a time back in our culture where dogs that saved people was like a very big trope. We had Lassie. We had Benji.
I'm going to wait for a third.
Here Flipper. We had Flipper.
Flipper is a dolphin.
A dolphin is the dog of the ocean, as we all know. And this was a thing. And Benji was just part of this sphere that came, I think, later than Lassie, because Benji was the 70s and Lassie was black and white television of the 1950s? So there you go. The first Benji movie was Benji in 1974. Then you had For the Love of Benji in 77. This dropped in 78, Christmas short. And then the double MacGuffin was just a cameo. Oh, Heavenly Dog, 1980, and Benji the Hunted in 1987. So there were a bunch of Benji movies out there. Benji, big international star, as is shown by the fact that Benji is literally playing himself, herself, in Switzerland. They have gone to Switzerland to be grand marshals of a Christmas parade.
Benji is a girl, I think, because in the IMDb, I think it listed her as Benjean.
Benjean, oh.
That's unnecessary.
I don't know how I feel. I mean, I don't want to misgender. I'll start there.
Yeah.
But also, Benji is a character.
This is actually very okay. I'm going to go on a slight tangent here, but last night I went to see Sir Patrick Stewart read from his book.
I knew you were going to mention it at some point.
Improvisers do improv scenes based on his readings. He was a delight, and he told a story. Spoiler alert, it has a dog boner in it, and it was the funniest thing to hear him. He literally said the sentence, I looked down and he had his big pink penis was sticking out and the entire audience saw it.
Oh my gosh.
Anyway, he was like, when he was in the Royal Shakespeare Company, he was in like a play and he wanted to get a dog, but the dog that they wanted to cast was like too pristine. So he just like went to like a kennel basically and was like, I need like a dog that like does not give a shit. Like I just need a dog that like looks like just any anonymous like street dog. And they basically gave him the dog that lived at the kennel, who was like kind of an older dog that, and he said it was like the best actor he's ever worked with. But the day he like brought it there, he started to call it its character name, the character name. So sure. I would imagine that for these Benji movies, they probably like cast them or went or did, you know, like did searches for dogs that looked like them. And then as soon as they got them, they said like, okay, they started calling them Benji. And probably in this one case, they were like, no, you can't call it Benji. It's a girl. It's Benjine.
That's very upsetting. But first off, great deal with Patrick Stewart. He is
yeah,
a very...
go buy his book. He had a specific place because he didn't want people to buy it like on Amazon. So but of course I forget where he wanted people to go buy it, but it was like an independent bookstore that he was like, please go.
I assume it was dogbonerbook.com.
I mean, it was the greatest story I've ever heard in my life. And then Matt Walsh went up and did a scene where he's an actor on stage and he gets a boner and like none of his fans will stop talking about the boner afterwards. And then after they did that scene, Patrick Stewart stood up and he was like, you're doing some really important work here. He's really funny, you guys, is what I'm saying.
But he doesn't own dogbonerbook.com, which disappoints me greatly.
For the record, I'm searching domains right now on GoDaddy, and it turns out I could get dogbonerbook.com for one penny for the first year. With a 3-year registration, I'll actually pay $44 today. What? GoDaddy, you stink out loud. At least your ads aren't sexist anymore.
I honestly didn't even know GoDaddy was still a thing. I assumed they went under.
Honestly, I only remember them because their ads were super sexist.
Yeah.
So they won.
They won. You know, sexism wins, everybody.
It
sorry.
Stood out.
Dog bone. You literally, anybody listening right now, I'm not actually going to buy dogbonerbook.com. But anybody out there listening right now, it could be yours, and you could make a lot of money selling Patrick Stewart's book.
Ugh, I love him.
Could you, though?
I love him like and his stories of dog boners.
I don't know. I kind of feel like I should buy dogbonerbook.com. I got money.
No wonder your wife makes snide comments at the Thanksgiving table.
Wait, what did she wait? Hold on. What did she say at the Thanksgiving table?
I don't remember this either.
She said something about how you keep getting bounce check fees because you spent all your money on.
Oh, my God.
Wait, what did I spend my money
on? Yeah, I do remember that.
Well, I still didn't hear you. What am I spending my money on?
Don't worry about it, man.
Chris Colt, Funky Cold Medina? What did you say?
You
know what?
You can rewind it and listen to it later.
Like, that's going to happen. Christmas Puna Dina. I couldn't look it up. I do not know what you said. I'm really, this is not a bit. I legitimately wish I to know, and I'll never know. I'll just have to live with that.
There is a point at, because first off, it does feel kind of weird that like, oh yeah, Benji is such a big goddamn star that these people like walk around as Benji's handlers and get to go, you know, like all around the world.
Yeah.
Presumably they get paid or something like that. And, you know, I didn't realize that that was the premise of this. I assumed that it was like Benji is a super dog that, you know, like Lassie, like saves people and stuff. But uh-huh. No, Benji's a movie star. And that's
it's very meta.
Benji's job. But then there's a moment that they call out. This dude, this just goofy dude is their like cart driver or whatever you call it, you know, and they get on and then he's chock full of personality and they're in Germany. And he's talking about
Switzerland,
whatevs.
You know who could tell the difference between Switzerland and Germany?
Santa Claus looked like in Germany. Rather what Santa Claus used to look like in Germany. But there is a movement afoot to bring me back exactly as you see me now.
Bring you back to Germany with a British accent?
At that point, I was like, okay, they get what they're doing. They're being cheeky about it. And like, yeah, why are we in Switzerland and this Santa Clausy dude type dude is a British accent. And so I was like, I'm willing to hear more about this. And as it continued, I was like, okay, this is intended for children. Yes. And there is no actual conflict in at any point in this. The story just sort of unfolds as basically, hey, here's some Santa jokes. Here's some more Santa jokes. Here's, you know, like what Santa does and like all his cool stuff. And that's kind of it. But like the writing was solid. There was the occasional joke and I was like, oh, this doesn't make me unhappy.
Wow.
And I was really expecting to shut down on this, but like props, mad props to, let's just say it, Fagan. He's also like I scrolled down and his IMDb is like, this guy is like the he's a character actor, he does all sorts of villains, like yeah. You know, he did a Iago in Othello, and like that's exactly what you would expect that guy to play. He's done Merlin a couple times.
Uh-huh.
And this Santa feels like 100% like Merlin from Sword and Stone, you know.
Yeah, I will say that, like, one of my notes was like, oh, this dude is committed. Like, he, it reminds me of like the famous, you know, Michael Caine talking about how when he got hired to do A Muppet Christmas Carol, he made the decision to act as if he was not acting opposite Muppets, but that he was like doing genuinely. Like he was like doing Shakespeare. Like he was 100%. Like, I committed and I was, you could not tell that I was talking to Muppets.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, like this dude is like, spoiler alert, at some point he starts singing and it's like way too far into the episode to really make any sense. Like, yep. like there's no indication that this is going to be a musical, and he does it, and he does a song and dance. And that dude was like, yeah, I'm going to go ham on this. Like, you hired me to do a thing. Cause honestly, the little girl actor and her aunt or whoever she is were really phoning it in.
Look, this felt just like right in the pocket for the 70s. It felt like the characters were just there going, what? I don't believe you. And like, that's it. They got one note and they play it, but that's like vintage 70s kid TV. So it felt nostalgic. Not good, but nostalgic.
Okay.
The Von Trapp family. That's who knows the difference between Switzerland and Germany, Chan.
God. That's, you know what? Every once in a while, I'll end up talking for longer than I expect. I usually expect to get cut off or like run over. And now I know that if that happens, that means that Ray is probably looking something up on Google to finish a joke that died 15 minutes ago.
Not listening to a single word you're saying.
Oh yeah.
I like the fact that you guys have now walked all over every aspect of my notes going all the way to the end of the episode.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. But we're still in the opening scene.
Hey, you were the one that said like, I have so many notes for this. All right.
Yeah, I don't want to listen to your fucking so many notes on this.
Fill
well, you know how it goes. I try to work them in, and then you guys derail me, and then I bang out like half my notes in about a 30-second period of time.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty normal episode of Knowing Is Half the Podcast.
Pretty standard.
Pretty standard. Yeah, I just wrote here, he's got the fakest hair that I've literally ever seen ever, until later on when it's some of the worst prosthetic nose work, when they get a big close-up of one of the children with the giant elf nose, which elves don't have noses like that, last I checked. It is some of the worst
freaking makeup work I've ever seen. Elves?
What's that?
You know all the elves, do you?
I know all the elves, yes. I absolutely do. He refers to himself as Kris Kringle. He says, I'm the German one. I did think it was a funny bit where she's like, if you're the German one, why do you got a British accent? Fun.
Thank you.
Anytime that you're a famous person or dog, and you're on your way to go somewhere, and your chauffeur says, hey, do you mind if we stop in an area where the people aren't able to attend the parade? In my mind, that means let's go to the poorest area around here, and you should say no. You should run. You should get out of your carriage.
Wow.
You should run. That guy is about to abduct you.
I thought you were going to say, like, it's taking them to a second location where they'd be kidnapped and murdered.
Yep.
But then you went to with the poor people.
Do who are going to kidnap and murder you.
Get surrounded by poor people. And this whole thing got very dark.
Look,
that's
who's
why I'm eating pumpkin flavored JoJo's. I don't want to deal with any of this.
If you shop at Trader Joe's, you're officially not one of the poors. Yeah, I'll say it. It's got to be said by somebody. So the guy who plays
hear the sound of these delicious JoJo's crunching.
Nope, not doing it. Guy Chris Kringle, he's going to be our MC. He's going to be our guide through this entire episode. As Chan said, there is not 1 ounce of conflict in this entire 24 and a half minute presentation. And it is very indicative of the 1970s. Both of the actresses, the mom and the kid, they're not really given anything to do. So it's hard to say they didn't do anything when they were not being asked to do anything, you know?
Sometimes people aren't asked to do anything and they still fucking crush it. So I don't know.
You know what? That's a good point. Honestly, that is a very good point.
Still working it, still trying to get them jobs.
And right after we get introduced to Chris Kringle, there's the big credit on screen that says, and Ron Moody as Chris Kringle. And in my head, I said, they really are excited to get Ron Moody on board. I do not know who Ron Moody is, but as you all have said, I looked it up and he played Fagin in the Oliver movie. And he actually died only a few years ago, 2015. In his 90s, he was born in the 1920s, which means that if you go far enough back in his IMDb profile, you get all those old-timey movie posters because he was appearing back when they were talkies, you know? What a G. He was delightful. I will say definitely the highlight of the entire episode.
Yep.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There's a bit where they like get to the shack and it's got a big verboten sign on it, which, you know, we all know what that means.
Uh-huh. Does that mean forbidden?
Not in Russian, my dear.
Oh, what does it mean in Russian?
Absolutely nothing.
I don't know what it is. It's just like, it's
him. He's good.
Yeah. And it's not it's not just like a knockdown, drag out funny joke, but like she's calling out like we're not supposed to be here. And he's like, no, in a different language.
Look, if you can't read the sign says nothing. I like that joke. I like that joke. Yeah, it's good enough. More than I was going to give this thing credit for.
I mean, look, the joke is thoroughly mid. Ron Moody like takes it up to a 9.
Yeah,
you know, real Peter Sellers sell job on that. I like that.
I agree with that.
So here's the deal: we stop off, we go through a doorway, we end up at what I assumed was the North Pole. It's revealed later that he moved from the North Pole to Switzerland. This is literally, instead of being a magical portal, it just takes you like just through a doorway to this other area that's just sort of walled off, which I think is kind of fun. And he says, people can't find out, but this is our secret Santa lab here in Switzerland. And we meet elves. They have presents. Turns out these elves are French elves. They have French accents, which I didn't really get. This thing's kind of all over the place, to be quite honest with you.
I think that if there was a Santa, this is how he would be. You think he would just have elves of one type?
They're elf all type. They mostly have British accents, and they all have their voices pitched up weirdly because it was the 70s and they didn't have really good technology for that yet, so everyone comes out sounding like a weird machine.
They all sound like Alvin and the Chipmunks.
But then what difference does love make if the boss doesn't go? It's all for naught and naught for all.
All right.
And we know who that is.
Have a cigarette.
I told you guys. This is the youngest I have ever seen him. But that is Deep Roy, who I mean, he's been in so much stuff. I think I think of him as, there's an episode of the X-Files where Mulder keeps seeing this like beggar, like he's like hallucinating this sort of like beggar man that's rolling around, and you're like, it's a very Twin Peaksy type of thing. But he's also in the new, he's all the Oompa Loompas in not the newest Willy Wonka movie with.
No, the Johnny Depp one.
But the Johnny Depp one.
No.
He's also in Big Fish. Let's see, what else?
He's in plenty of stuff where he is completely makeuped, so you wouldn't know him. Because, like, yeah. Like, yeah. I would have recognized him in Neverending Story, but, like, or no, he doesn't have that much makeup in that.
No, he's just wearing a top hat. He's got a slow snail.
Yeah.
Or a fast snail.
Like, he's in friggin' Dark Crystal. He's Droopy McCool in Return of the Jedi, you know.
Yeah, and also he was inside Yoda.
Yeah.
Oh,
he was inside Yoda. Wow.
He was having sex with Yoda, but, like, in addition.
Oh, my God. He killed Yoda and wore his skin as a suit.
Mm-hmm.
I do my favorite Deep Roy moment, of which I only have one. Which is, we saw the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory back in 2005. I saw it with an ex-girlfriend. Well, not ex at the time. And I remember, like, we watched the movie and we get to the credit scene and it said Deep Roy as the Oompa Loompas. And she turns to me and she says, they hired an adult actor to play all the Oompa Loompas.
What?
What?
She thought Deep Roy was a porno name.
Oh, adult actor?
Right, adult. Right.
Like a triple X porno actor.
I was confused.
His name is Deep Roy.
There's like three little people actors in this, and everyone else are kids.
It's weird because we start with the little people and then move our way to kids for the bigger numbers.
Yeah, like when they think you're not paying attention, they just shove some kids in there like, oh yeah, they're probably, little people too. But especially at during the musical scene, there is one kid up front who you can tell he's a little kid because, like, he doesn't know his choreography. So he's just watching Moody.
Yes.
He's doing it. And his eyes are just
freaking
glued to him.
I've made a lot of notes about this kid and this part. I will hold these until we get to the musical number because everything Gina said about the musical number appearing way too late in the episode with no musical numbers before it.
Yep.
Spot on accurate.
True.
We're about 18 minutes into a 24 minute thing. And they're just like, and now the musical number. And it's like, no guys, you blew your chance.
I mean, to be fair, I will say, like, if you cast Ron Moody in something, who is like obviously a known singer. I mean, anyone who's seen Oliver knows the, like, you've got to pick a pocket or two, boy.
It's a great number.
And he's got that very, like, he doesn't have the best voice, but he's a showman. Like,
he's expressive.
Yeah. And so I wouldn't be surprised if they were like, oh shit, we cast him. Should we put a musical number in this? And then, like, the writer is like, you want me to do that now?
I'll write it, but it won't be good. I don't have a lot of time.
Here's another side note. Ray was trying to pretend that he's not a Nazi by saying, oh, look, Gina's still on Twitter. Gina's still on Twitter. But this there is a very delightful story that I reposted that now has, let's see here.
The one I referenced at the beginning of the episode.
42,000 likes on it.
Up to 42,000 X's.
But it's basically like a woman started tweeting and she was like, oh, I just had the weirdest experience. I was watching an X-Files episode, speaking of X-Files and Deep Roy. And there's a random country song playing. Basically, like, long story short, she was like, oh, I wonder what song this is. Googled it. And the only thing that exists on the internet about it is other people saying, who knows this song from the X-Files? So she went down like a rabbit hole of no one ever identified it. Since 1998, there were people like on the internet being like, I've been trying to find this song since it aired. Why can't, it's not listed in the credits. Why can't anyone find it? So she went through this whole thing of like, Shazam can't find it. No one can find it. And everyone on Twitter started to like weigh in, and someone was like, this is the name of the music supervisor. Maybe someone can find them. They found the music supervisor, who was like, crap, I don't remember this. Like, maybe it was written for the episode. Anyway, they found the two guys who recorded that.
Oh my God.
And now it's on the front page of Rolling Stone. This Twitter thread started it all. I now follow the dudes on Instagram, and he's been like posting for days about like, well, no, since it's just happened yesterday, he's been posting, but like, he basically was like, oh my God, I had no idea people were looking for this song. They basically said, we need a song. It's in a bar in X-Files. Can you have it on our desk in 4 hours?
Oh my God.
And he and the other guy were basically like, all right, I don't know. Like, what's okay. So like, the X-Files is about space. What else is in space? Stars, aliens in love. Let's write a honky tonk hillbilly version of Aliens in Love.
That's funny.
And like people that like Twitter found it within like 4 hours, and now it's the front page story of Rolling Stone. And this guy was like, oh, I'll try and find the old recording because I don't know where it is. It's in storage, which I'm sure someday Chan will be saying about this this podcast. And sure. He was like, yeah, I mean, if everyone wants it, I'll just put it online for you.
Remember when we did that? We did that cartoon last year that appeared behind the guy on the TV in his holiday picture.
Yes, yes, yes.
Just that again.
Yeah, but like it's so evident how starved the internet is for like something positive, because the original thread has 136,000 likes. Me just reposting it and being like, "This is the only thing the internet should be used for." 42,000 likes. And all of the comments are like, oh my God, this is what the internet used to be. Like, this is, I love this so much. Anyway, go look up the thread. But I could imagine that like at some point this was already written, and like they were like, I don't know. Like, it seems a little slow. We've got this guy. Do you want to just toss a musical number in there? And the writer was like, yeah, I guess I'll go write it. You want it in an hour? Okay, here you go.
Here you go.
G.I. Joe will return after these messages.
In trying to make an artistic statement, one should be careful not to let one's personal aroma do the talking. In order not to offend the critics, I recommend Rightguard Sport Stick. It provides maximum protection and the freshest scents, a sublime palette of odoriferous emanations. After all, a true artiste should be remembered for his inspiration, not his perspiration. Rightguard Sport Stick. Anything less would be uncivilized.
Now back to G.I. Joe.
So the basic idea behind what the how the flow of this Benji special goes is, because there's no conflict. It's Kris Kringle, aka Real Santa Claus, played by Fagin from Oliver, kidnaps Benji and his two handlers. Benji does next to zero this entire special. It's just Santa takes them to various aspects of his North Pole setup, and then we just play around with the space, and then we go to the next one and we play around with the space, and that's all we do for the entire episode.
It feels like a play. It also kind of felt like homework when I was watching this.
A little bit. I will say it moves a little better than some of the other things we've watched recently. I didn't stop it to see how much was left until about halfway through. So that's not bad. That's not bad compared to other things.
Cannot believe that Gina walks around talking about Christmas goddamn spirit starting in like mid July, has been like donating all these inflatable Christmas gifts for Ray's house so that, you know, like, you can have like awesome Christmas stuff in the yard, and is constantly berating us for not having enough Christmas spirit. She goes to like 6 parties a week that are holiday related.
I've got 3 this almost. Saturday.
We get to a holiday special that is, it's not about the jokes. It's not even about the star power or special effects or anything. It's purely about, isn't Christmas nice? And Gina's like, both birds flying, fuck this show. I want nothing to do with it. Bored me to tears. Can't be bothered to have a little milk of human kindness. Fuck y'all. I am so disappointed.
All I said was it was a little slow.
No, that is not all you said. And what you said in between the lines was even more rife with disdain.
I was also, I'm not going to lie, very concerned with the treatment of Benji, because this was 1978. It's not today. And anytime I watch movies with animals in them before like 2005, I get really distracted about whether or not they were treated well.
98% of this movie, she is being held by the little girl.
I know, but like, do you think that that little girl knows how to properly hold a dog?
She's the dog's owner, according to the lore of this thing. He travels the world with him.
I was concerned for that dog. There is also other animals in this show. There's like horses and camels, and I wanted to know how they were treated.
And the donkey.
Okay, thank you.
My goat. My goat. Goodness. So
we have real reindeer on set here, because we do explore the area here, and we explore all of Santa's animals for his different incarnations around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of fun. There's a reindeer on the roof. And then there's a weird thing where they're just like, get this other reindeer out of the cage and let him nibble his ear.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, all right.
Reindeers fuck y'all. That is important.
Dude, they get down. That's clear. Clear by this episode. And then we go to, and this is very fun. Fun adjacent. We're going to explore Santa's wardrobe.
Mm-hmm.
And we walk, and at this point I just wrote, is Benji just a prop at this point? They could have done this with no Benji.
Yeah, yep. You know what? This like outfit section was fun. The like life-size paper cutouts of his outfits was fun.
There was a point where I was like, do we need to give a rice patty hat to the Korean Santa?
Thank you. Okay. Yeah, yes.
I wish they had just stuck with the Russian Scandinavian places, because
I mean,
to be fair, at least they didn't go beyond.
Well, here's the thing. In this segment, they did not go beyond. I will leave it at that.
Now, I'm looking at the Wikipedia page, and according to this, the eventual plot is Kris Kringle wants to send his elves out to deliver all the presents this year because he wants to just be home on Christmas Eve like everybody else. And that's actually pretty reasonable.
Broke his leg.
Take your PTO. Does he show evidence of a broken leg?
Yeah, he's got a cast on the whole time. He's
a cast for most of the thing.
I never noticed a cast. And in fact, when that thing was broken on the ground and everybody was staring at it, I didn't understand what was happening.
Oh, you have problems.
Never noticed he had a broken leg until I read the Wikipedia entry right now.
Melissa deserves a medal every day she is with you, because I imagine that what your home life is her explaining something to you, you either doing it completely wrong, not the way she asked, or forgetting in general, her re-explaining it to you, you making the same mistake, and then like 3 days later, she's like, I'm not even going to bring up the fact that you didn't do that thing. And then you being like, you never told me.
What, you got cameras set up in here? What the hell? This is crazy.
This is exactly the
it's
way
a little too real.
I perceive it, and everyone should. Imagine it when they think about Ray's home life.
So we have two little people, Needles and Pins, and they're boning in the closet when Santa walks in, right?
100%.
Okay.
I didn't like the fact that he was smoking a cigar, I'll tell you that much.
I also really enjoyed the fact that he was in a flammable closet with a bunch of clothing, smoking down a stogie. Love him for that. Now, these are two little people and not children, because they do all these comedy bits. They're clearly a duo of some sort. And I like the fact that Santa's like, look who I brought. And they're like, yeah, this human. Great. There's this other human.
You want us to fucking make clothes for them too? Goddamn slave driver.
Thank you. And then they're like,
I do like that they like talk about which country would buy that these two women are Santa. Like, they look at the little girl and they're like, I guess like Norway.
I will say though,
Iceland,
the way they approach it is 100% like a legit theater costume designer would do it.
Yes.
Somebody walks in and you're like, Fuck, I gotta do you. All right, okay, well, I can. I got this. I can make this out of something else. Like, they are sick of it and don't want anything to do with it, but also they're already halfway to make it for it to be done because the fucking baller.
I like that. There's only one reason that someone I don't know would be brought in here, and I'm not happy about the extra work.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I like that. Truthfully. If they recognize an actor but don't have a reason for them to be in there, that's worse. I've been that actor. I got a custom tailored purple plaid suit for my production of Oklahoma that I did in college, and they tell me it was a delight to make. They did not let me keep it, though. Real bummer on that. Oklahoma, what a show. Probably doesn't ever need to be done again. Okay. We have a giant book of outfits, and Gina's right. This bit was pretty good, where they turn the pages of this giant, like, 5.5-foot book that he just sticks his head over the top. And then here's what I would look like in this country. Here's what I look like in this country. And then he uses the magic and appears out dressed as real Santa Claus.
That's fun.
Yeah, I thought this was fun.
A fun bit.
There was also the bit where the elf is, like, talking to Benji. He's like, oh, that's sweet. Here, have, like a beautiful jeweled necklace.
Yeah. Yeah, at first I was like, oh, is it supposed to, like, I guess it's kind of like a collar, I guess. I do like that Santa was like, listen, there's already too much going on in this other costume, because, like, the matron, whoever the older woman is like, isn't it too expensive to give to a dog? And he's like, nah, what am I gonna do with it? My costume for that country already has way too much bling.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, it's white and gold and, like, totally makes sense. Like, that there's one of the things about watching so much trash like we do. There's so much that doesn't make sense. So when something just does the bare minimum of, like, establishes a teeny bit of logic and you're like, oh, shit. No, that actually does follow. A follows B, or B follows A, I guess. A, then B, then C. And just that simple thing, I'm just like, yes, I'm in. Thank you.
I'll be honest, you guys, I missed the part where he gave him the bling. So when it's revealed at the end of the episode, I was very lost. I was very lost as to where that hat, why that happened.
How did I miss that? How did I expect Ray to have noticed that and to have known that it ties up at the end? God damn it. I am a fool. Thinking Ray is anything less than a double fool.
I just assumed it makes sense if you actually, you know, so I don't know. Maybe I was taking notes at the time it happened, but this entire section, I do not remember Benji being given this bejeweled collar.
Do you snore when you're taking notes just out of curiosity, this note taking of yours? Does it involve being unconscious?
I just missed this part. I don't know how. Apparently, it's a pretty big, impactful part that you all remembered. But no, I do have. They're working on new designs, pins and needles. They have a punk rock Santa outfit, which I thought was kind of fun.
Yeah.
I did catch that, but missed the collar. So when they say at the end, when Benji still has the collar at the end, it's actually a pretty good tie the thing together callback moment that I was lost on me. I also never noticed, you know, the cast. So, guys, I work in quality control and attention to detail. Can you believe it? Wow, how'd that happen?
Hey, look, I, as someone who works in an office and whose job is mostly to keep track of all the little minutiae so that things don't get lost in the cracks, who constantly loses things in the cracks, I get it.
Yeah,
I'm here to when there's a crisis, boom, I'm on it and I'm gonna take care of it. I'll make everything right. When there's nothing going on and I'm just supposed to, like, maintain all of the basic stuff, cannot for the life of me. Just the worst at it.
Can't do it. No, it's disappointing. Honestly. Anyways,
there was also a thing. I don't remember what it was. It was one of the costumes or whatever. And they cut to Benji, who does a double take. Yeah. And I was like, oh, that's funny. What Benji's
it's when Santa steps out of the book and is wearing the costume that he was just.
You know, that's taking advantage of your technology. Like, that's all the special effects you can do in 1978. You know, unless you pump a lot of money into it.
Cut away, cut back.
Honestly, I didn't mind it. Did not mind it at all. Well, now we're going to go to the CPAC, which I thought for a second that they showed up at the Conservative Political Action Committee.
Yeah, no, that's, that seems right.
I was very concerned about where this episode was going. It turns out it's the Christmas Eve Planning and Communications. And the elves there, Benji is on a circular table, I believe, in the middle of this room. And there are three or four elves petting Benji. And these elves are petting him, her, in a way that I don't think they've ever touched an animal before. Because they are essentially pushing his head and just slapping. I can't even describe how badly
this is what I'm talking about. I don't like it.
These children are petting this animal. Yeah.
I don't like kids around animals any day of the week.
Sure.
Kids on a set around animals.
Immediately following that, Kris Kringle's like, "Hey, everybody, it's Benji. You're not going to get to see the parade, so come look at Benji." And my God, it felt like one of those fast zombie swarms where they just all these children just like, oh, and they just surround him and huddle up, and the adults, including the little girl, like pull away. Which, you know, you need to so that they can do the dialogue or whatever. But it was just so weird that, like, they just left Benji in the middle of all of those cretins. And normally I don't agree with you, Gina, when you talk about children in that fashion. But 100%, it felt like Benji was in danger.
Yeah.
Yeah. And officially at this moment, this is where we replace all of the little people elves with children elves.
Yeah.
And I would argue the makeup they do on the little people is 1,000 times better than anything they tried. They were just trying to bang these children out. That sounded wrong.
It did, but you know what? These kids deserve it. I just noticed as I was scrubbing through here, all of these kids are dressed in like the garb that they'll be doing later for their for the big dance number where we're going all over the world.
Yes, we are. This is a great moment. Honestly, this is the moment that did make me laugh because Santa is now explaining the physics of Santa Claus to the children, to Benji's handler child. And he's explaining it. He's like, well, you know, I have 24 hours the way nighttime works to get this thing done. I couldn't do it in less. And then he just starts mansplaining Santa Claus. And they cut to one elf who just rolls their eyes and walks away. And I legit did laugh out loud at that moment because, like, it was unbearable. It was wonderful.
I mean, to be fair, that's the whole point of this thing. This whole special is like, what does Santa do? Why is Santa? How does Santa? So, like, sure, tell me how. And again, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but it makes a teeny amount of sense. Uh-oh. Like, oh, it's not just like a regular 8-hour night. It's a 24-hour night because you're following the sun or chasing, running away from the sun. Yeah. So you're always in night. Like, yeah, I'll take it.
Yeah, I did like that. I was expecting the answer to be when she was like, how do you do all that in one night? I was legitimately just waiting for him to say magic. And I was going to like get annoyed. So the fact that it wasn't just that.
Yeah.
Is good.
Good enough for me. Now look, we've explored the animal pens. We've explored the wardrobe and magic of that. We've explored the logistics area of Santa's operation. Where else could we go but the mailroom? We're going to the mailroom.
Room full of men.
Uh-huh. Oh, this is
it's
letters.
Rain and mail.
Hallelujah.
And this is, yeah, this is where they say, come meet Benji, everyone. And the dog is just mobbed by everyone. Here's the deal. Unless you've seen it, you cannot do justice to how uncomfortable that moment is.
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't care for it.
On top of that, Chan. And this is where we get our surprise song. It's the Multiplicity song because Santa's a complicated character. And one of the best thing about this musical number is that out of nowhere, again, like 18 minutes into this 24-minute special, dude just starts singing and dancing. And then Benji jumps out of the arms and runs off set up some stairs. literally Benji just nopes out of the musical number, and I laughed uproariously.
But Benji comes back.
And I wrote,
leaps.
No, go ahead.
Leaps into Kris Kringle's arms.
He does. As I wrote, Benji apparently got his contract negotiations settled, and he's back. Let's go.
I mean, they probably said to Benji, it's either that or the swarm of children again.
Because, yeah, I was laughing because I wrote this story in my head that Benji signed the contract for the show saying no musical numbers. And as soon as he starts singing, Benji's like, F this. I'm walking off set. And then, you know, got a whole big check written to Benji to say, yes, you just do it. And that's why Benji runs back in and jumps into his arms all excited. I believe that's what happened behind the scenes. No one can prove me wrong. And this is where we get to the children and the Russian dancing.
Because we're starting out.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Go ahead.
Hey, just the song, which.
Oh, I got to hear some.
I don't. I generally will not volunteer to play a song. And this isn't a good song. Not a great song. It's not a certified can't gold really banger. I
love this special.
And yet.
What?
Multiplicity, a splitted personality. I'm more than one and even more than two. I'm just what people think of me, and that's what I must always be. So think of me, please, kindly when you do.
And then, you know, it's going to start getting a little hotter and heavier, and we're going to break out the big dance numbers.
You never would think of it from that. It's a mild banger. It is I'm shocked I'm saying this. It was a little bit of a mild banger.
Mild banger was.
Don't worry about that. That's it.
I must remember.
Okay, I apologize. That wasn't the real kicking part, but
that really wasn't, Chan. No.
If you go to that section, you will see the kid in the, let's say, Spanish regalia.
Yes. The bullfighting matador.
Just locked onto Santa as he's swaying back and forth and doing the moves just barely. He is hanging on by a thread. That poor fucking kid.
This is true. And I will say, Mild Banger is the adult film that Deep Roy made in an alternate universe.
Oh,
nice. Yeah. No, I'd
bring that one. Out. Land that plane. Now the Russian dancing is where I really noticed. It was did they rehearse? Did they practice these dances at all going into it? Do they have multiple takes? Were they trying to shoot this so fast that they were like, that's good enough? Because they have musical numbers where there are children in the musical numbers not dancing, but then they start late and then they go for it. And then one of them has his eyes off stage to the dance coordinator just to see what the moves are. And I'm like,
it feels like a play. It's like a high school play.
Yep.
They brought in one ringer.
One ringer. If this was Rock Live, I would understand if you only had just the one take on live television. But my understanding of this special is they could shoot multiple scenes. They could have takes. Why don't you get one where the children know what the fuck they're doing?
Mm-hmm.
Here's the point where I don't know the name of the dance, but when you think of Russians dancing, it's the thing where they're sort of
Cossack
squatting,
leg dance,
kicking their... Thank you. Cossack leg dance. Cossack leg dancing? Really?
That's what I call it.
Cossack dance, sure. But he's kicking his legs out. And at this point, I'm like... And in my notes, I wrote, if this motherfucker dancing, this motherfucker can work. There is no reason that he can do the Russian kick dancing. If he got a broken ass leg, what the fuck?
And oh, you were ahead of the story.
I thought that this was a gap. I thought that they're like, oh, who cares? We just need to have a dance scene. And that's part of the reason why I'm like, shit, man, they actually got it and they nailed it. I approve of this.
I'm looking up.
Anyway.
I'm looking up the Cossack leg dance, just Googling it really quick. Mm-hmm. According to this, the Russian leg kick dance is called the Kasatsky kick, or the Cossack dance with a picture representing exactly what you're thinking right now is called the Hopak.
The Hopak.
Ukrainian folk dance originating as a male dance among the Zaporozhian Cossacks, but later danced by couples, male soloists, and a mixed group of dancers.
Oh, nice. Okay.
So we learned something today. That's very exciting. Now, this is where, as we're trying to celebrate the nations and countries of the world, this is where the casual racism just starts to bleed through just a little bit.
Not casual. The Korean one was casual. This is five motherfucking children lined up in robes, in Chinese rice paddy hats, and fucking Fu Manchu mustaches.
Yes, they are.
And goatees. There's a gong. They're bowing.
Boy, oh boy.
They're mincing around Santa. Then they bow.
Look, I wrote... That's where I was just like, okay, it's the 1970s. Our appreciation of Asian culture is unfortunately reduced to Asian stereotypes and nothing else. I wrote this is meant to celebrate the cultures of the world, but I'm pretty sure it does not pull it off.
Regretfully. Just a fun selection of screenshots. I'm just sending y'all's way, so just... sit in that.
Put these on the Facebook group. Put these on the Facebook group, please. The Facebook group needs to see them because, yes, these are very upsetting. Go to facebook.com/knowingis.
Should we be podcast posting these?
And
you know what? If they get flagged for hate speech, I'll take that. I can't believe
we haven't been flagged for hate speech. And, we love here. We love on this show. But we cover things that don't, unfortunately. And this is where I wrote, what is that on the ground that's broken? Is that a vase? Did somebody break a vase? What is that? Is that a shoe? Is that somebody's shoe? Why? Why are we all staring at each other? Why is this overly long moment with this thing I can't recognize on the ground? I don't know what's happening here.
I hate this.
Apparently he's been wearing a cast the entire episode that I have not seen or am clear about. And apparently during the dance, why is he dancing with a cast on? I do not know, but apparently it breaks and comes off. Therefore his leg is healed.
But no,
I've seen that Fast and the Furious movie where The Rock flexes his way out of a cast, thus proving it's healed. I assume this is a similar situation.
Dear God, for reals?
Chan, do we need to sit down and watch every Fast and the Furious movie? Because I will. I will take that upon myself right now to educate you.
You know what? You go. You just get started, and I will join you shortly.
Chan, I'm not even kidding. I bought them and have the digital codes. I have the Movies Anywhere app on my phone. I can watch the Fast and Furious franchise literally anywhere. Yes, they're all saved to my phone. We're watching them. Who wants to see it? Patreon.com/knowingishalfthepodcast. Let us know. Anyway, he just wanted to stay home. Kris Kringle did on Christmas Eve like everybody else. But it turns out, in a logic gambit, everyone else's home counts as him staying home. Therefore, Christmas is saved.
Indeed, it is.
I think the elves would have done a good job.
That the thing that makes him happiest is delivering gifts. And not, in fact, he thought that he wanted just a day off to just be like everybody else and chill on Christmas. But he realized that what truly brings him joy is to be at home. And home is wherever he breaks into around the world.
Other people's homes.
Yep.
You know, when I told the police that everyone else's home was basically my home, they weren't buying it.
Yeah, well, can you speak Russian? Because this dude can.
Yet. That's all I got.
I know.
And this is where he says, okay, guys, we're going to send you back to the parade, but we're going to Men in Black you here. You will remember nothing. And honestly, one of the neater edits I've seen where he says you will remember nothing. And then the camera sort of pulls away from the two of them on the couch where they were sitting to reveal that they're on the couch in the sleigh about to go to the parade. And honest, this is the second time I was like, for 1978, that is not bad visual effects. That is not a bad cut. In fact, I would argue it's a very good one.
There you go.
I really like that moment a lot. It hit me on an emotional level I don't think edits usually do. I can't explain it.
And then they're sitting there, mayor like pats Benji's head.
Uh-huh.
Oh, look at that lovely necklace. What?
Yeah.
It's the necklace they got in Santa's workshop. The driver turns around. There's that motherfucker right there.
Kris Kringle, who earlier in the wardrobe scene got out of the American Santa outfit back to his traditional German one, but kept the Santa hat on. Wearing that outfit with the red hat, and he comes out in the wardrobe scene and says, they say you've got the Santa hat from USA on. He goes, nobody's perfect. They do this callback with the jewelry, and they turn, and then he turns back to them and says, well, nobody's perfect.
Pobody's nerfed.
Motherfucking Christmas.
That's gold. Now, I did right here, when the hell did Benji get that gold chain?
Jesus Christ.
Did not remember this or notice at all.
See, when it comes down to it, Ray's too dumb to understand Christmas. Gina says she loves Christmas, secretly doesn't give a flying fuck, and I'm the only one here holding it down for the holiday spirit.
These are truly, truly end of days, if that's the case.
I find it a hard argument to argue that Robert Clark Chan has the most Christmas spirit of the three of us on this show, but I will say that particular argument was somewhat compelling.
Here we are. Up is down, black is white, cats and dogs living together.
Finish it.
Total chaos.
No, mass hysteria. What's wrong? Why would you say the wrong thing there? Total chaos.
He wanted to make it his own. He wanted to put his stamp on it.
No. That's very upsetting.
Stamp balls.
And the parade just starts. And I just said, who cares at this point? Show's over. Fade to black. Go to credits. 1978's Benji's very own Christmas story. I'll ask the question, but I think I know already. Robert Clark Chan, did you enjoy this?
Absolutely did not think I would enjoy this. I enjoyed it a fair amount.
Would you say this is one of your favorite things we've watched for the show in like 8.5 years?
Wow.
Absolutely not.
Wow.
No. Oh, wow. There's
some things that I got true joy from. This exceeded my expectations more than almost anything. I'll put that in the top five of exceeded expectations.
Okay.
But I had low expectations.
TV's Gina Ippolito, how did you feel about the Benji Christmas special?
I thought it was fine. Not something I will ever have a desire to watch again.
Fair enough. Yeah, I find myself in the Gina camp. So this is one of the very fabled Ray and Gina versus Chan episodes. As it goes. Not as fun as the Gina and Chan versus Ray episode, but I do believe we did venture into that territory several times as we recorded this today. I think that's a fair statement. I found this to be very mid. There's really nothing to get mad about this because nothing happened. It's just, let's go to a bunch of sets. Let's do a bunch of bits. Let's just use the locations as best we can. Let's put some money in, get some animals, get some children, and not teach them how to dance, and then have them dance. And let's just bang this out. This feels like it was made in a weekend. I will say that. not really anything here. To me, very mid, very average. I'm with Gina and saying I will probably forget about this tomorrow. I will wake up tomorrow with no memory of having seen this, which is going to be real weird when I need to put it online.
Yeah. I may show this to my kid. Who knows? Maybe he'll like it.
I could see enjoying this when I was little for sure.
Man.
There okay. you go.
Okay.
Before like you that. Knew about reckless animal endangerment on Hollywood sets.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
Or I guess Swiss sets. This was filmed on location, I assume.
This was filmed on location in France. In
Solvang.
In Nice. It was filmed in...
Oh, for reals?
Yeah, I looked at the credits here. Oh, wait a minute. I think... Oh, crap. Half of it was... The interiors were shot in one location, which I believe was in England. And then the outdoor stuff was in France.
Okay.
I'm gonna verify that.
That's fair.
But yeah, it was shot in Europe, 100%. So Benji did get the Adam Sandler vacation to Europe out of this, which is very exciting. I hope they didn't make Benji, like, you know, be in the, you know, luggage car underneath the plane for the long trip to France. Dude,
no, this motherfucker does not get out of its handler's arms for less than 10K.
Well, that's probably what it took to get back on set.
Like,
there we go. Okay, excuse me. So I got that wrong. Filmed on location in Zermatt, Switzerland. But the interiors, what's that?
Joking, but it's literally filmed on location in Switzerland.
Yeah, where else are you going to get German writing that isn't scary? The interiors were filmed at Victorine Studios in Nice, France. So there you go. I did get the Nice,
cool.
France part. The only part I remembered.
Wow. All right, then.
So there's that. And I do feel like I need to pay off a bit, because I was talking about the Funkin' Wagonal story, and we've teased it several times. And I do feel very strongly that I should tell this story briefly before we get off the air.
Are you just padding time now?
No, I don't pad time with the show. Gina, these episodes go as long as they're going to go. Sometimes it's like 55 minutes. Sometimes it's an hour 40. And there's no rhyme or reason to any of it. Like,
nope.
It's about how much stuff not involving the show itself do we have to talk about? What things in the outside world do we want to discuss that pads the time of the show? Because I believe a show that we actually stick to the script on would be about 50, 55 minutes. So when you go as a listener of this show and you see hour 45, we do a lot of going around the topics. A lot of going. Anyway.
Tell your goddamn story so we can get out of here.
The Funkin' Wagonal story. So, and I found out actually it's not Funkin' Wagonal. So I already got that wrong. We as a family, when I was a kid, younger, we were all in like elementary school. I was probably in fifth or sixth grade. It was Ranger Rick magazine. We subscribed to Ranger Rick Nature magazine. It was not Funkin' Wagonals. And there was one particular issue.
Subscribe to it right now.
Is it still a thing?
Still a thing.
Oh, wow. So we were subscribed. And there was one particular issue of Ranger Rick that greatly upset me. And it greatly upset me because on the cover, it was the cover or the interior like centerfold of the magazine. Was basically a snake eating another animal. And the animal's like head or body was like sticking out of the snake's mouth. And I still find this to be very skeevy. I find that entire deal to be very upsetting. If you own snakes and you grow and buy live mice, a mammal to feed to the snake, and just put it in the cage knowing you are committing murder of a mammal, I have a hard time with that, much like I have a hard time with hunting, but this feels a lot more visceral to me. Anyway, one of the Ranger Rick magazines had a giant photo of this exact setup where one animal is eating another, and it upset me at the very core of my being. And unfortunately, I let my feelings about this known to my family, who then made sure, to a point, to keep this issue of the magazine well past this point. So if they ever got mad at me about something, they would chase me around the house to try to make me look at the picture of the thing that upset me. And so there were lots. Okay. And that's not even talking about the Charlie McCarthy doll, but that's a whole other story. I'm just talking about the Ranger Rick magazine, not Funkin' Wagonals, Ranger Rick. And so essentially, like, if I would make somebody mad, or if I was just getting out of control, they would threaten. They'd be like, I'm going to get the magazine. And I'd be like, no, you're fucking not getting the magazine. But you wouldn't say fucking because I once said hell in front of my parents and got my mouth washed out with ivory bar soap. So don't say that.
Ooh, that is rough.
Look, the '80s were a rough time to be a kid with boomer parents. I don't know what to tell you.
Wait, are we still talking about Ranger Rick?
Yes, because they would pull out the magazine, and I would scream and cry and run around the house and try to lock myself in my room, and they try to slide the magazine like under the door. Like, no, this was torture. This was torment, and I need to express myself because that's not right. Don't torture your children with upsetting literature. And that's why I support book bans in our schools.
Hey, it's Brent Pope, the host of Breakfast with Brent Pope. You've seen me on some of your favorite TV shows saying things like, give it up, Jimmy, you gotta sink this putt to win. Or, I wouldn't jump up and down until we stabilize the hydraulics. On Breakfast with Brent Pope, I sit down with guests from the entertainment world, working actors, comedians, writers, stunt people, you get it. And we do it all over breakfast, or should I say, Breakfast. Every week is a new episode of Breakfast, and here's what you get. Inside Hollywood info, like, how cool is it to act with Ed O'Neill? Spoiler alert, it's really cool. And what the heck is a gaffer? You get great Breakfast recs and foodie debates like, when should you go hash browns and when do you go home fries? I know the answer to that. Trust me, my pancake posse, my bacon brigade. Listen up, because Breakfast is the most delightful 30 minutes of your week. So dig in, it's Breakfast time. Breakfast with Brent Pope, available at Breakfast.com, Apple Podcasts, or wherever fine podcasts are found.